Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name is Stu McLaren, and I'm your host for season 5 of the show, and I am in studio here today with the one and only Mr. Michael Hyatt. How are you?
I'm doing great, Stu. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing great. We're going to be talking about something today that somebody wouldn't normally say, hey, wait a minute, that's an issue, but that is the burden of having too much opportunity.
Yeah.
Because it can be a problem, it can create a lot of stress, and unless we learn how to do a few key things, which we're going to talk about here today,
yes,
it can become a big problem in our lives.
Yeah, the real key is to accomplish more while doing less, which sounds totally counterintuitive.
Yes.
But the most successful people I know are people who have mastered that. And our opportunity can often be our undoing when it overwhelms us. You know, you get a little bit successful and then opportunities start coming to you and you keep saying yes, and pretty soon you're swamped and then you're not delivering on what you committed to do.
Yeah, it becomes a burden at
yes.
that point where you're almost like fearful of new things coming your way because you just can't handle the overwhelm.
Well, and you have no margin left.
Right.
You know, and if you think of margin as a metaphor for more space in your life, and think, you know, books have margins.
Yeah.
Because if the type ran all the way to the edge of the page, when you looked at the page, you'd be stressed.
Yeah. It'd be a very difficult reading
That's
experience.
That's right. Yeah. And so in advertising and in typesetting, you know, they usually allow a lot of white space because it makes the subject or the content breathe and it makes people relax.
And so what we're going to try to do in this episode is kind of bring context to what that looks like in our life.
Yes.
So adding more margin by, as you said, doing more by
accomplishing more.
That's it.
By doing less.
Awesome.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's dig into this because one of the things that you have talked about is dismantling the yes bomb. And so I want to find out about that because this really came from a book that was key for you in identifying this and bringing this to life. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, I don't remember who first recommended Greg McKeown's book, Essentialism, to me, but I would love to send them money.
Yeah.
Because probably have 1,000 people claim it now. But Greg has become a friend, and that book is one of the best books I've read in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I've read it now through several times. I've interviewed Greg on this podcast. I think that his work is so seminal at this point in the life of our culture.
Yep.
Because everybody we know, everybody you know, is just overwhelmed. They're busy.
And it's in all areas of life. You know, they tend to stack on each other and overlap. You know, you have work and your responsibilities with that. And especially if you're a business owner and you're trying to grow, then you've got family life and you've got your social life and perhaps church responsibilities or whatever it may be. They can all start to stack
yep.
up.
And how can you get it all done?
Right.
And so the common refrain you hear when you ask people is say, well, how you doing? Oh, I'm crazy busy. And it's kind of said as a complaint, but it's sometimes a little bit of a brag.
Right. It's like a badge of honor.
Yeah, it's a badge of honor.
I'm important because I'm busy.
That's right. I don't have any time for myself. I have no margin in my life. I'm very important.
Yeah. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to kind of dismantle that because for most people, there can be tremendous benefits by doing less and actually cutting back.
Oh, huge.
And so what we want to do is we want in this episode to talk about the 7 realities we must come to terms with to experience less, but better.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with reality number 1.
Yeah, the first reality is the power of choice. Now, this is a hard thing if you've never thought about this before, but to realize that your life right now is by and large the sum total of all the choices that you've made up to this point. So good, bad, ugly. There's probably stuff in your life that you love, and there's probably stuff in your life that you hate and you're not quite sure how you got here. Mm-hmm. But once you realize that you have the power of choice, you had the choice of making that decision, whether it was to meet that person or to say yes to that little thing that led to that big thing that now is controlling your life, that you have the power of choice.
Right.
And the good news about that is that you don't have to be the victim. And so if you're willing to accept the power of choice, you can make different decisions that can lead to different outcomes. But that all begins by accepting the power of choice. As long as you deny that, mm-hmm. you know, that your life is the result of somebody else's choices, then you're not going to go anywhere.
You have no control at that point.
Yeah. I wrote recently on my blog about how important it is to choose the location you live in.
Right.
Because who you associate with is powerful. So if you choose to live in a place where there's not a lot of opportunity, like, for example, we live in Nashville, Tennessee. That's where we're sitting here today. You know, this is Music City, USA. If you want to play particularly country music, this is the place to be.
Right.
You know, so if you're not here, you're not going to have the same opportunities as you would if you were here. And so I had somebody who was an aspiring country music person who lived on the West Coast, who wrote on my Facebook page. They said, well, this is easy for you to say. I don't have a choice.
Hmm.
And I thought, well, really? I mean, you always have a choice. You may not have that choice this moment.
Right.
But if you set the intention, you know, that things were going to change, what if you could do that 2 or 3 years from now?
Right.
But until you get clear on what you want and assume that you have the power of choice, nothing's going to change. You're going to go through life being a victim, thinking you're stuck and wherever you're stuck, and you can't go where you want to go.
And it's amazing, too, because these choices compound on each other.
They do.
And I was talking to my wife about this recently. You know, we're 35. And one
Braggart.
Of the, and the conversation that we had was, at this point in our life, we're starting to see a real divide in terms of the people that we grew up with, our peer group. Those that have made successful choices, consistent successful choices, are starting to go in one direction. And those that have consistently made poor choices are starting to go in another direction.
Yeah.
And it's becoming more and more obvious now at this particular times in our life. And it, when we were discussing it, we were just talking about this very thing. It's the choices that we've made and those choices compounding over time.
Yeah, and they're small and incremental usually.
Yeah, they're insignificant sometimes in the time. Yeah.
But they really do add up. You know, if I decide today, for example, I'm gonna sleep in and I'm not gonna get up and go run.
Yeah.
Okay, well my life can probably
nothing
survive, you know, a day of that. But if that little choice becomes a pattern of choices and that becomes a habit and it becomes a lifestyle, then it becomes my destiny.
That I think is the key lineage there.
Yeah.
With how a choice, even though it may seem insignificant in the moment, can really add up to a big consequence. Big consequence.
What is Darren Hardy's book on that, The Compound Effect?
Yes.
Yeah, powerful book on this very subject because he takes that financial principle of compounding interest and he applies it to all the decisions you make in your life.
Right.
But it all comes back to this thing we're talking about, which is the power of choice.
Right.
You know, if you want to change your reality, you've got to own that. You've got to accept that for what it is.
And that's what we're talking about here today is how to achieve more with less. And the first reality that we need to come to terms with is the power of choice. What's the second reality?
The second reality is the momentum of focus. Now, here's what I mean by that. I used to think that I did a lot of things well.
Yeah.
And I used to believe in what I now refer to as the myth of multitasking. And not just me, a lot of people refer to it as the myth of multitasking. As it turns out, you can micro-slice, you can focus on certain things for a specific amount of time, but you can't do more than one thing that requires concentration at a time. It's just intellectually impossible.
Right.
And yet, a lot of people try to live their life like that, so they don't focus. Entrepreneurs are particularly bad at this.
Right. Squirrel.
Squirrel.
Opportunity.
Yeah. And so they're not focused. They're trying to do a bazillion things. They sometimes are cheap. They operate out of a scarcity mentality. They don't hire any help. But what I've learned over now going on 4 decades is that there are about 3 things I do well. Mm-hmm. And when I get outside of those 3 things that I do well, then I really get scattered. I lose momentum. My life gets crazy busy. I don't enjoy it as much. But when I focus on the places where I really add value, those 2 or 3 things, that's where I add the most value. So that's what I'm talking about, the momentum of focus. And I think one of the things that our listeners need to do is to ask themselves the question, not what can they do, but what are they particularly good at?
And this is sometimes hard for people to identify. Like if somebody's struggling with identifying what are they good at, what advice would you give them?
I'd say ask the people that are closest to you. Sometimes they can identify it more readily than you can.
Right.
Like I know exactly what you're good at.
Pray tell.
But seriously, I mean, you're really good at any kind of strategy, brainstorming. You're an incredibly inspirational, positive influence on any team that you're a part of. And those are the things that you need to be focused on.
And it's interesting because once we started working together, you guys really brought that out, you know, before. I think it's always been there, but one of the things I appreciate about you as a leader is your willingness to double down on those strengths or the strengths of everybody on your team. And it's not a situation where you're trying to make everybody really good at all things. What you really do is you want to make the strengths that a person has, you want to amplify those and give them the environment and the place to really focus on.
Well, thank you. And I really do believe in that as an operating philosophy. But I think that when people are focused on their talents, on their strengths, they get stronger.
Hmm.
And I lived in a corporate world where you tried to focus on your, quote, areas of opportunity, things that were the weaknesses. And if I've learned one thing from Marcus Buckingham, who started the whole strengths movement, is that you can only move the needle slightly when it comes to polishing your strengths. But if that same energy is focused on, excuse me, I should say it the wrong way. You can only move it slightly if you're focused on your weaknesses.
Yeah.
But if you're focused that same energy and effort on your strengths, that's where you can make the biggest gains and create the biggest outcomes.
So there's a bigger return on your investment from a business perspective, but there's also a bigger return on a personal life by focusing on the very few things that you do really well.
Well, and this is the key to getting margin in your life too.
Yep.
You know, to doing more and accomplishing less. Do more of what you're good at.
Yeah.
Outsource, eliminate, automate. There's 1,001 things you can do with it, but don't derive your significance from thinking you have to do all this stuff and prove to the world how important you are.
Right.
No, get narrowly focused on the few things where you really add value. You'll enjoy your life more. You'll have a much bigger impact on the world.
Great. So we've covered two of the realities so far. What's the third reality?
This is one that Greg McKeown talks about, particularly in Essentialism, and that is the importance of trade-offs. There's a sense in which decisions are kind of a zero-sum game. If somebody asks you, if I ask you, are you willing to come host my podcast? There's a trade-off.
Right.
Right? So you can only be in one place at once. There's something else you're not doing by making the choice to being here.
Yep.
And I think that a lot of people don't recognize that. They think they can keep adding on to their life.
Right.
Without letting anything go. And then they wonder why they're crazy busy, have no margin, are running around frantically out of energy all the time.
Yeah.
But to realize that every opportunity that presents itself, if I say yes to this, I'm going to have to say no to something else.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I try to do now is that when I'm invited, and I learned this from Greg, when I'm invited to consider another opportunity, like Gail was just invited to be on an amazing board, a board member on this organization that sounds really interesting. But I said to her, like she so often says to me, I said, honey, you got to consider the trade-offs. Mm-hmm. What are you willing to say no to in order to be part of that? And so now when I'm invited into opportunities, I often say things like this. I'll say, in order to be faithful to my current commitments,
yep.
I have to say no to that.
And it's hard. It's really hard.
Really hard.
Many times there's things that we really want to do, opportunities that we really want to go after, but as you said, there's always a trade-off. And especially when you just look at it purely from a time perspective.
Right.
If you're going to be investing time somewhere, you're going to need, it's going to be taken out of time elsewhere. So for example, like you were saying here, the trade-off for me is I'm not at home. I'm not at home with the family per se. I'm not at home.
I needed to bring that up because then you might not come.
It's okay as long as it's in moderation. but that there's always a trade-off somewhere. And it's important to be aware of the trade-off because then you can make decisions accordingly.
Well, and part of it is that time is a very unusual resource.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people sometimes think that money's finite, but the truth is you can create more money.
Right.
You know, it may be difficult. It may take you a long time. You may not be particularly good at it, but it's not a finite resource.
There's ways to replenish itself.
That's right. But the thing about time is it's not replenishable.
Yeah.
You've got 168 hours. I've got the same amount of time that the President of the United States has, or the Prime Minister of Canada. I've got the same amount of time as he does, same amount of time as you do. It's just a question of what we do with it.
One quick thing I want to bring to the listeners' attention, because you did an exercise recently with your inner circle, which I thought was very, very powerful. And that is, you have a spreadsheet that you basically break down all the time that you have in a year that's mm-hmm. available. And then you allocate it to the most important areas first. And then you put a dollar figure on what each hour is worth. So that when new opportunities come, you are able then to evaluate how much that is actually going to cost you. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to this?
Yeah, this is an exercise or a tool that I've got called Spend It on Paper, Spend Your Time on Paper. And I really got the idea from Dave Ramsey, who talks about budgeting your money. And he talks about spend it on paper before the month begins so you know that every dollar, where it's going. In fact, have a name for every dollar, I think is what he says. Well, I think the same thing is true for every day. And so what I've done, we're recording this in, what is this month? July of 2015. And already 2016, I've done this for. So I get out there, well, it's still a white canvas.
Yep.
Before anyone has spoken for the days in that year, and I say, I'm going to take control of my calendar before somebody else does, because if I don't have a plan, somebody else does. So the first thing I allocate is my free time. So I went through and I put on 2016 or on the spreadsheet that I want to take, you know, I want to take a sabbatical that's a month long. I want to take 3 1-week vacations. I want these 10 holidays. All that gets allocated first. Okay, how much time does that leave me? These are the work days that I've got left. And by the way, deduct weekends too, because I'm not going to work on weekends.
Yep.
Then I take the total amount of revenue that I'm going to generate over the course of the year, and I divide it by those days left. So that's how much every one of those days is worth.
So now when somebody says, hey, can you come speak at a conference, for example?
Yeah.
Immediately, you know what that's going to cost.
This honestly, and I don't recommend this for everybody, but this is what got me out of speaking so much.
Right.
Because I realized that every time I spoke, and I get paid a lot for speaking, but it was usually a deficit.
Right.
Because by the time I added in the prep time, the travel time, the actual speaking time, I was losing money. And sometimes it's worth it.
Yep.
Okay. But I got to make that as a conscious decision, knowing what the trade-offs are.
Right. And that's really what we're talking about with this point, is the importance of trade-offs and being aware of them ahead of time.
That's right. And so then it comes down to, is this how I want to spend my time?
Yep.
And, you know, trying to again, spend it on paper before people start asking me for these days and I don't know what they're costing me and I'm just giving them out.
And one of the funny things that I want to bring up, because when you were sharing it with us, the first time you did this exercise, you were like 15 days in the deficit.
I was.
Yeah.
I was overbooked because I think we did this 2-3 years ago and I was 15 days. By the time I allocated all the days, I needed another 15 days. You know, I needed a 380 day year.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, they're not making those. And so the next year, I ended up with a little bit less deficit. I think it was maybe 6 days. And this year when I did it, again for 2016 coming up, I actually had a surplus of 15 days, which made me feel very rich.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, wow, I've got 15 days. And then I started thinking, how could I spend those days?
Well, this is great. And I think that as an exercise, it was a very powerful tool to just give you context over the value of each hour, each day that we have in a year, and then being intentional about carving that out so that we can look at the trade-offs that are going to happen when we make decisions or choices.
You know, before we forget it, we should post that tool in the show notes. In fact, we will post that tool in the show notes so people can put in their dollar figure for whatever it is, and they can spend their days on paper.
Perfect. Okay, so awesome. You'll be able to get the show notes for everybody listening at michaelhyatt.com. So we're talking about doing more with less. And we have been going through the 7 realities that we must come to terms with to experience less but better. So far, we've talked about 1, the power of choice. 2, the momentum of focus. 3, the importance of trade-offs. And stick with us because we have 4 more realities coming up right after this break.
If you're like most members of my audience, you're committed to winning at work and succeeding in life. But the truth is, you struggle with finding enough time to do it all. And that's exactly why I wrote my new ebook, Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week, 4 proven strategies for creating more margin for the things that matter most. You can't buy Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week, but you can get it for free by subscribing to my free email newsletter. My email newsletter notifies you whenever I've posted fresh content to my blog, so you don't always have to visit my blog to stay up to date. To get your free copy of the Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week ebook, visit michaelhyatt.com and enter your name and email address into the form on the page. If you're tired of feeling like there's never enough time to get it all done, don't miss your chance to discover how to reclaim the margin you deserve. Sign up at michaelhyatt.com.
Welcome back. Today we are talking about how to do less and achieve more. And Michael, we've been talking about the seven realities we must come to terms with to experience less but better. And so far, number one was the power of choice. Number two, the momentum of focus. Number three, the importance of trade-offs. What's number four?
The value of extreme criteria. So the busier you get, you can no longer evaluate opportunities by, is this a good opportunity?
Right.
Because the truth is, once you achieve a certain level of success, the only opportunities you see are good,
mm-hmm.
right? And I would occasionally turn somebody down and they would come to me and they'd say, well, you haven't even heard what the opportunity is. I mean, do you really want to pass on a good opportunity? It's like, yeah, I actually do.
Yeah.
Because what I'm looking for now is great opportunities. And Greg McKeown in his book, Essentialism, says it this way. He says, if it's not a clear yes, it's a clear no.
Right.
And in fact, I want you to tell the story where you went through this last fall.
Well, I was sleeping in a cabin. I had my wife right beside me. My daughter was in a bunk bed in the same room. And we were at a family camp. It's like summer camp for families. And I had just read Greg's book, Essentialism. And I had also read Gary Keller and mm-hmm. Jay Lapassane's book called The One Thing. And the very similar concepts.
Yep.
Very powerful books that had a huge impact in my life. And one of the things that they that Greg talked about was evaluating decisions on a 10-point scale. And basically, he said you rank any opportunity on a scale of 1 to 10, and you are very clear about your criterion in terms of how you are evaluating mm-hmm. those opportunities. And so first I thought about that. How, when an opportunity comes my way, how do I evaluate whether it's something I want to do mm-hmm. or something I don't want to do? So for me, my three criterion was stress. That was my number one criterion. Is it going to increase stress or decrease mm-hmm. stress? In my life, I'm looking to decrease stress in everything that I do. Number two was impact. So am I going to be able to have a large amount of impact and really help people? And number three is profitability.
Mm-hmm.
So is it going to be something that's going to be tremendously profitable? Typically, the businesses that I'm involved with are either software or information-based, so big profit margins.
Lots of profit.
Yes. So that was my criterion. So then I looked at everything that I was doing at that point, and I started evaluating on a 10-point scale how those projects or businesses that I was involved with rank according to that criterion. And I came to a very difficult discovery, and that was the business that I started and founded with my co-founders, Tracy Childers and Mike Lopez, on a scale of 1 to 10, it was an 8 for me.
And that's the hardest.
The worst possible number it could have been, because then I was justifying to myself, well, if we just do this, it'll become a 9, or if we just do that, it'll become a 10. But Greg said, if it's anything less than a 9 or a 10, immediately eliminate it. He said, you have to be, as you said, like, you have to have extreme criteria. You have to be ruthless with that decision making. And I, at the end of the day, I said to myself, what is it right now? It's an 8, and therefore it's got to go. And so when my wife woke up, I said, honey, I think I've made a big decision. And she said, well, what do you mean? And I said, I think I'm going to sell my stake in Wishlist. And she said, tell me why. So I explained to her, and you know, she's incredibly supportive. And she said, okay, I believe in you. Let's do it. And that was the starting point to a real change in my life and all positive. But it came down to having an extreme criteria and being very clear about what that is.
Stu, I think one of the important things to say is that when we're making these kinds of judgments, we're not judging that opportunity.
Right.
You know, it's not that that business is a 7 or an 8. It's just that that opportunity for you, given the context of your whole life,
right,
is a 7 or 8. I had a similar experience, as you know, with my relationship with Dynamic Communicators, Inc., and the work that we did in helping public speakers, which is still a phenomenal organization.
Absolutely.
I really believe in what they do. I send everybody I can, including my staff, to it. But for me, at this season of my life, it wasn't a 10. So I made an exit. Fortunately, I've had a great business partner who understood that. But, you know, given everything else I was trying to do, it just didn't make sense. And
right.
so you've got to use those kinds of extreme criteria. Otherwise, you get kind of sucked into a mediocre life that's not giving you a lot of passion or a lot of joy.
Yeah.
And they can all be good things, but they're not great things.
But the one thing that I would say to everybody is that it's almost liberating when you're clear about that criterion and you are extreme with it, because then it almost gives you permission. It almost makes the decision for you. You know, you don't have to deliberate, you don't have to think about it much, because it's pretty black and white at that point. And that's why I was very grateful to Greg for that exercise, because it made that decision of selling Wishlist way easier. I probably would have thought about that for months and months and months and still not come to a conclusion.
It'd be really interesting for Greg to go through and see how many decisions were made based on that book.
Right.
Because those are pretty radical decisions.
Yeah, exactly.
But I haven't talked to anybody yet, and there's probably some out there, but people who have made decisions like you and I made, I feel great about that decision now. I'm so, so glad I did it, because it made space for some of the other things that I'm doing now that are much more honed to who I am as a person and where I can make an impact and a contribution.
I think that's the biggest key lesson right there, because I feel the exact same way. It created space for the kinds of opportunities to be able to come in.
Yep.
Okay, so number four on the realities was the value of extreme criteria. What's the fifth reality?
The fifth reality is the role of the journalist.
Okay.
And that is, don't become so emotionally involved in all these other things that are outside the scope of you at your best, that you get sucked into opportunities you shouldn't be doing.
Right.
So being the role of a journalist means you take an objective role. You know, you look at it like a journalist, and you're looking at the facts, you're looking at the objective criteria, hard for me to say, objective criteria, and then you're making a decision based on that. So look at it like a journalist is taught to think.
From like a third party perspective.
Yeah, like if a third person came into this situation who didn't have an emotional stake in it, how would they evaluate the opportunity?
And this is sometimes key to separating the emotion of the decision.
It is.
Yep. Okay, great. So understand the reality of the role of the journalist. What's the sixth reality?
Sixth one is the power of clarity.
Okay.
Man, I meet so many people that aren't clear what they want in life. It's easy for them to complain.
Yep.
It's easy for them to do work that they don't really enjoy or that doesn't really jazz them up, but they're not really clear on what they want. Because I've asked people this question a lot of times, well, what is it that you want?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure. And I love to follow up with my wife, Gail, asks this question. Well, if you were sure, what would you, would you say? You know, what is it that you want? Because the destination that you envision determines everything. And so getting that clarity is critically important if you're going to make progress and if you're going to accomplish more while doing less.
And you have an amazing presentation designed around, it was called The Designed Life. And it's really about getting clear so that you aren't drifting and ending up in a destination that you don't really want at all, but getting clear so that you can work towards it.
Well, and this is why I'm really excited. I don't mean this to be a plug, but my new book, Living Forward, is all about this, about life planning.
Yeah.
Getting clear on the destination. Where do you want to be 25 years from now?
Yeah.
And then working backwards from that. What kind of marriage do you want to have? What kind of health do you want to be in? What kind of career do you want to be in? What kind of contribution do you want to make? Because if you can get that kind of clarity, it makes decision-making in the moment much easier. Like we talked about this before, but I want to be, I'm 60 years old now, so at age 85, I want to be in amazing health. You know, I want to be able to get around, I want to have balance, I want to have endurance. You know, I want to have all the energy I need to accomplish what I'm being given to do at that time. Well, guess what? That makes my nutritional choices, my workout choices now easier, because I know I'm not just going to drift to that destination. It's going to take some effort if I'm going to end up there. Otherwise, I'm going to just drift to a destination I didn't choose, like so many other people do.
Well, we're talking about how to do less and achieve more. We're talking about the realities that we all need to face. We've talked so far about six of those realities. What's the seventh and final one?
The seventh and final one, and probably the most important one, Stu, is the liberating possibility of no.
It's liberating but difficult.
Liberating but difficult, particularly for people that, like me and like you, I know enough about you to say this, are people pleasers.
Yep.
You know, and we want to say yes. We want to be helpful. The problem is that when we say yes to things that are not important, to things that are less than the best things, we're saying no to those most important things. And so we've got to frame it like that.
Yeah.
You know, and we've got to see saying no as really just the flip side of saying yes. You know, when I say no to that speaking engagement that really sounds interesting to people I really like, it means that I'm going to be saying no to my family.
Right.
No to my grandkids. No to being in my home. You know, and that maybe find them, and there's a place for that. But if I say it too much, pretty soon the things that are urgent become, you know, take the precedence over the things that are important.
And so what you're really saying is, by saying no to the speaking engagement, you're saying yes to the important things, like you were saying,
right,
your family, being home, and so forth.
Because again, it goes back to the importance of trade-offs.
Right.
You know, it's never, I can do all this.
Yep.
You know, my time is finite, and I've got to choose well. And that's why no is such a powerful word. And I think there's a couple ways that Greg helped me in the book Essentialism to do a better job at saying no. And one of the things that he does and he recommends, and I think he got it from Stephen Covey, and that is put a pause between the request and your response. So you get an email message and somebody says, hey, can you do thus and so? And rather than just instantly replying, which is what I used to do, because I try to be responsive, I say, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give that to Susie, my assistant, and she'll get back with you, because not that I don't want to say no, but I want to have some distance between the request, and I know that she manages the calendar much more objectively than I do.
Right.
And I got into real trouble this year because I said yes to a wonderful trip that sounded really fun, sounded really great, but it had a cascading impact through my calendar. And I'm still, even at the moment that we're recording this, still paying for the decision I made for that.
Yeah.
Because I didn't put space between the request and my response. I just impulsively said yes.
And I have something similar too. My amazing executive assistant, Summer, had her first child this year. And the baby came a little bit early. So she's on maternity leave, and inevitably, those requests came directly to me. Normally, they would go to Summer, and it's a similar situation where she would make the decision for me. Well, they were coming directly to me, and being the people pleaser, I said, yes, yes, yes. And before I know it, the calendars got booked up way more than it really should have. And that was a big lesson for me, is that I need somebody to objectively be able to look at the opportunities that come my way. Because as you said, I'm a people pleaser, you're a people pleaser, and I just want to make everybody happy. And they're all great opportunities. They're all things I love
absolutely.
To do. There's nothing that I don't love to do, but it became too much in too little time.
I do have it also on my website, and we'll link to this in the show notes, but I have written a blog post called How to Say No with Grace, I think is the name of it. But it basically is a series of templates. And it's the most common request that I get. And so I wrote a very thoughtful template way to respond to that so that I'm not left to the impulse and the pressure of the moment.
Right.
So when somebody asks me if I'm interested in investing in a company, or would I review their manuscript, or would I come speak, I've got a response that I've thought out thoroughly in a moment when I wasn't so emotionally involved that I could just quickly respond.
Well, Michael, this has been great. And we have been talking about how to do less and achieve more. We've talked about the seven realities that we all need to be aware of so that we can do that very thing. Number one, the power of choice. Number two, the momentum of focus. Number three, the importance of trade-offs. Number four, the value of extreme criteria. Number five, the role of the journalist. Number six, the power of clarity. And number seven, the liberating possibility of no. As we wind this down, I'd love to give people some practical examples of how you're personally using essentialism to guide your decision-making. Can we talk about that?
We can. Because you asked me this in advance, I wrote down a few things. So number one, what it's meant for me is less speaking and more writing. Speaking is a wonderful thing, and I still love to speak, but less speaking and more writing.
Yep.
Because when I'm writing, my thoughts are going when I'm sleeping, you know, they're working when I'm playing with my family. When I'm speaking, I have to be there. So it's a little bit different. Number two, less consulting, more product creation.
So more leverage.
More leverage.
Yeah.
I want to create things that work when I'm not working, or that I do the work once and then it continues to work.
Yep.
Number three, less working in the business, more working on the business.
And that's, again, can be difficult for entrepreneurs because we get wrapped up in the day-to-day. Rather than the bigger picture.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you want a business that runs itself, you've got to do that. You've got to apply your intelligence and your wisdom to creating a business that works. Number four is less work and more family time.
And when I met you 2.5 years ago, and we talked about the possibility of working together. This was your top request when we spoke. You just said, I just want more time with the grandkids. I want more time with my kids. Yeah. And so then from that point forward, you got very intentional about designing your business to be able to serve that priority.
Yeah, and I think it's really worked. I mean, this last year, counting weekends, I took 154 days off.
Wow.
So that was weekends, 10 holidays, several vacations, and it's possible. It may not be possible all at once.
Right.
But it's possible over time, but it begins with that clarity thing and setting the intention.
Awesome. Well, Michael, this has been a jam-packed episode.
It's been fun.
Lots of great examples there, and I want to encourage people. We've got lots of goodies over in the show notes, and you can pick those up at michaelhyatt.com. That includes the spreadsheet that we talked about in this episode about how Michael plans his time. It also includes the post about how to gracefully say no. So definitely go over to michaelhyatt.com, grab the show notes. Also, you'll see the video version of today's episode there as well, so you can watch that as well. One final thing I'd love to ask for you is, can you also take 30 seconds to jump over to iTunes and rate the podcast? We'd be very grateful for that, because what it does is it just helps get the show in front of more great people like yourself. So just take a second, jump over to iTunes, let us know what you think of the podcast. We'd be forever grateful. Michael, as we wind down this episode, what final thoughts do you have?
You know, I was just thinking, Stu, of this quote that I heard a while back, and I don't think this is Greg's quote. I'm not sure whose it is, but the idea is this: you can do anything you want. You just can't do everything you want. Mm-hmm. So choose well.
Awesome way to end the episode, my friend. I want to thank you, and I want to thank you, the listener, for joining us here today. Until next time, remember, your life, your one and only life, is a gift. Now go make it count.